Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, Susan Lager, a couples therapist and relationship coach. I'm the founder of CoupleSpeak in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, which provides live and online products and services for couples in all kinds of relationships. Now, your call-in number is toll-free, 877-497-9046. Or if you prefer to pay the toll, the regular toll number is 760-542-4114. I don't know why you would want to do that, but you might. Anyway, stay on the line for the next half hour for tonight's very first episode of this new show. And tonight is the last night of, well, it's the next to last night of 2010. It's Thursday, December 30th. This new show, the CoupleSpeak Relationship Forum, is all about relationship issues, whether we're talking about marriages, loverships, friendships, relationships with family, or just your relationship with yourself. And on the show, what I'll be doing is discussing these things, tools and ideas to solve relationship problems, and I will be talking with relationship experts and experts in different fields about all kinds of subjects as they may relate to the relationship that you're in. So it should be interesting. Hopefully it'll be very informative. What tonight's show is about is how to radically raise your relationship IQ in 2011. That sounds very fancy. It sounds very difficult, but it's really not rocket science. What I'm going to be doing is sharing some of my thoughts and ideas about this subject for about 15 minutes, and then I'll open up the line for caller questions and comments for the last 15 minutes. And hopefully it'll be fun and it'll be informative. What I'm hoping will not happen is what happened on my test show, which is where I dropped my water, I dropped my phone, and my headset fell out of the phone. So hopefully we won't have that kind of equipment failure and tech failure. In any event, the first thing that I probably should do is define what do I mean when I say a high relationship IQ or to raise your relationship IQ. I call people who have very high relationship IQs relationship aces. And what I mean when I refer to somebody who's a relationship ace, it's someone whose relationships have a few different qualities. They're close, they're joyful, they're growthful, they're attuned, and they're mutually beneficial. So they basically have very happy relationships that work not only for them, but for the other person involved. And they're relationships that move them forward. There's a lot of learning, there's zest, and there's a lot of energy in those relationships. And then the question is, what makes some people so smart about relationships? And we've all seen them, where they seem to just so easily relate, and other people so painfully clueless. And, you know, a lot of people wonder, you know, are the people whose relationships are really good, are they PhDs? Do they have lots of advanced education? So maybe they know things everybody else doesn't know. Or are they just lucky? You know, maybe they just happen to hit upon the right people at the right time in their life. Or did they luck out? Were they born with just fantastic models so that they start ahead of time, you know, with an advantage that other people don't have? Or if they are clueless about relationships, that they seem to be having failures, are they high school dropouts? So maybe they lack, you know, education and information about this, or are they maybe just very jinxed? Are they people who have terrible you know, terrible luck, or do they come from broken homes, or do they just have inherently very low self-esteem so that everything, every relationship they touch is really terrible? And, you know, I thought a lot about this. I've been doing individual and couples therapy for about 23 years. I've been in private practice at the Couple Center in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. And I don't think it's really any of these things, although maybe the one thing that I do think really impacts everybody's relationship is how high or low their self-esteem is. And, you know, and I've also thought, so I've looked at the people I've worked with, I've noticed patterns, and I've also noticed my own relationships. And I've come to a few, I guess, truths about this, things that I think really factor in a much more meaningful way than any of these other things like education or luck, et cetera. What I've noticed is that people who do really well in relationships show certain patterns. And, you know, they're fairly consistent patterns over time. And basically what they're about are patterns of attitudes, of behaviors, and a kind of mindfulness that they show in their relationships that what I notice seem to lead toward happier relationships or not. And so, you know, you ask yourself, what are these patterns that, you know, relationship aces, as I call them, seem to exhibit? The first thing that I've noticed is that people who do really well start with themselves. They think about how to take care of themselves in every relationship. So there's a kind of appropriate selfishness that's at the core of this. And I don't mean in a withholding way or in a thoughtless way, but selfish in the sense of thinking about, these are people who think about their wants, their needs, and their expectations in every relationship. There's a mindfulness about it. They don't just blindly push forward and hope for the best. When they think about these wants, needs, and expectations, they also wonder, are these at all realistic? You know, is what I'm wanting and expecting something that's achievable in this particular relationship, or is my head sort of in the clouds? These people also aim high. They set high expectations without being perfectionistic about it, so that they really kind of visualize and reach for good things in relationships. They do not settle for peanuts, and I think that's a very, very important central thing, to factor yourself in, think about what you need, what you require, and to aim high so that you're more likely to have a successful relationship. Another thing that relationship aces do is they make these wants, needs, and expectations known clearly. They don't make demands. They don't have hissy fits in order to get what they need in relationships. And this is a very important thing because I see this so often in my practice, they don't expect the people they're having a relationship with to read their minds about what they're, you know, what they need. They make their needs known. And, you know, that's always much better. So what I say to people, if you want your relationships, the very first thing is to do is to think about yourself, to factor yourself in, and to not settle for less in your key relationships. You know, sometimes we all make concessions. We all have to make compromises that don't always feel so great. But what I'm talking about is an overall pattern of either aiming high and really trying to get something that feels satisfying or kind of chintzing yourself in your relationships. Another pattern that I've noticed in people who do really well in their relationships is they think about, what is the value in each of my relationships? What's its importance? What's its meaningfulness to me? And is this someone with whom I'm a confidant? Do I share secrets and very personal things with this person? Is this somebody who is a partner in decadence, so we like to kind of go over the top? In this relationship, is this primarily about adventures and kind of over-the-top experiences? Or is this a relationship where they, you know, there are very deeply held, shared, loving feelings? You know, I've had some relationships with people where all we could really do was shop. And I mean that literally. We were great shopping buddies. And if we tried to do something else, like have a very intellectual conversation or do something particularly deep or heady or something high risk, it just would not fly. This was a shopping buddy. And so part of what I think we all need to do is think about what is it that we share with this person that has value and be realistic about putting that into the relationship. Another thing that I think is really critical for everybody to do in order to have better relationships is to look at how do you show the valuing of the other person. And there's a guy named Gary Chapman who's written a book called The Five Love Languages. And he talks about how he focuses primarily on marriage, but I think his premise holds for all relationships, that there are about five basic ways through which we show caring. And, you know, ways, about five different, he calls them languages, through which we all either feel valued or not. One of them is quality time. One of them is gifts. Another is acts of service. So don't tell me you love me, just mow the lawn or empty the dishwasher, that kind of thing. Another is physical touch. There are some people who respond really well to a hug or a kiss or just a gentle touch when they might not respond to a gift, for instance. And the fifth one is affirming words. For these people, having conversations where they feel acknowledged and affirmed and is sharing, whether it's verbally in person or it's the written word, it's a text or it's a letter or a note, you know, that helps them feel valued. In any event, I'm not going to go into any more detail about his book, but his main point is that in all our relationships, what we need to do is pay attention to how the other person feels valued. And I see this very often in my couples therapy, that people show caring, but they speak the wrong language. They talk to somebody who's an acts of service person, for instance, somebody who would love to have the dishwasher emptied, and they give them flowery words or they invite them to have sex. And it just doesn't fly. So Gary Chapman's point is to speak the language of the other. It's kind of, I say, when you're in Japan, speak Japanese, don't speak German. So pay attention to what the other person needs and then show the valuing in ways that will register for them. Relationship aces, as I call them, don't project onto other people what they think they need. They kind of tune in, they pay attention, and when they don't know, they ask. And they also don't use one size fits all. They don't show valuing in the same way in all their relationships. You know, they try to tune in differently in different relationships. Another thing is, I think a very important thing for people to do in their key relationships is to evaluate the strengths and the weaknesses in the relationship, to be mindful about what do you do well together and why, what are the limitations and why, where is the relationship flat or just kind of lifeless, and to try to build on your strengths, to do the things together that really capitalize on where you do well rather than try to do the impossible. As I said, I wouldn't take my shopping buddy to a very heady lecture. I'd go shopping with her. So be thinking about the social situations, the activities, and the topics that you can talk about where you do well. And you'll avoid a lot of problems and a lot of disappointments in relationships. I think you'll avoid pitfalls in relationships. Another thing is that I think relationship aces, you know, people who are really smart in relationships, they pick up social cues and they adapt. They're very strategic. So, you know, as I said, they don't do one size fits all, but they kind of tune in case by case, person by person, and they pay attention to the social cues. There's actually a big new book written about that by Daniel Goleman called Social Intelligence. Anybody who wants to learn about this subject would do well to get that book. He's really written a brilliant book. A final thing, and obviously this is just a very brief little synopsis of you know, my thoughts about how you'll do better, is to stay out of the fire, to avoid toxic relationships, and to get smart about what are the relationships that feel either exhausting or guilt-provoking, demeaning, demoralizing, dangerous. A lot of the D's are really bad in relationships. Abusive relationships, and not only physically abusive, but emotionally abusive relationships, controlling relationships, or just hostile relationships. And I would say, I guess I would characterize toxic relationships, if you were to use a generalization, they're ones that undermine your sense of well-being, your emotional safety, and your personal growth. And if you're really careful about avoiding those, like the plague, and focusing on where, you know, are the relationships in your life where you feel nourished and you feel joyous and close, you're doing better already there. So that's my two cents. What I'm going to do is open up the line now for anybody who has a question, and I'll be happy to, you know, answer your questions as best I can. So here we are. And we have a few callers. Feel free to let me know what you may need. I'm going to open up the air. Okay, let's see. We have, okay, there. Now you're on the air if you have a question. Anybody?
Yes. Hello?
Yes.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes. And what's your name?
Well,
yes, I can hear you. What's your name and where are you from?
My name is Laura, and I'm from New York City. And
oh,
thank you
hi.
Very much.
Hi. I heard you guys got sucked in the storm.
Oh, boy, we did. Yeah. And now it's just one muddy river. It's really a challenge to walk across the street. I've lived in New York a long time, and I don't think I've ever seen so much snow piled up. But,
God. You must be a very hardy soul.
Yeah, and what about where
so
you
what's
are?
What's your question? I live in southern Maine, and my office is in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and we only got about 12 inches, and we're hardy souls here up here in New Hampshire, so you know we're kind of used to this.
What would you like to know, Laura? I was very interested in everything you said, and you mentioned a couple of different authors who've written some interesting books. And I was just wondering, is there any way that I could follow you? Have you written any literature that I might be able to look up in the future?
Oh, yes. You know, I'm glad you've asked that. Yes, actually, I'm up till most nights till about 1:30 in the morning. I have to force myself to go to bed at 1 because in my new second life or second win, I'm a writer. And I have a few places. I have two blogs, actually. One is called... Susan Lager, beaclosercouple.blogspot.com. And the name of that blog is the Susan Lager, the Closer Couples Coach blog. That's on the blogger forum. And that's all about your relationship with yourself, all kinds of issues that relate to how you manage yourself, how you live a better life, and how you do better in all your primary relationships. The other one is, what's the address for that? It's susanlager.getthejoyback.com. And it has been called the Susan Lager Better Couples blog, but I'm probably going to rename it. I do this a lot. I keep changing things up. Hopefully that's a good growthful thing. But I think I'm going to rename it the Susan Logger Best Life Blog. But if you Google me, Susan Logger, Portsmouth, New Hampshire, you'll find it under there. And I've been doing the first one since April. There are about 70, maybe 72 entries. So, you know, there's quite a lot there.
Great. Thank
Does
you.
That feel
Very
helpful.
Helpful.
Oh, you. Yeah, oh, and by the way, I also have, I almost forgot to mention this, I have a website where you can go. It's the howtobeabettercouple.com. That's the website, mm-hmm. and you can get access through that website if you subscribe. I send out my subscribers all kinds of free information, free reports, and then in the next month I will be developing a membership site where people can buy ebooks and teleseminars. That's not quite developed yet, but right now there are a number of articles, some of them unpublished. Some of them are published. You can find them elsewhere on the Internet. I've published several in goarticles.com and in e-zine articles about all kinds of things. So, you know, hopefully, you know, you'll find something that you can relate to there.
Great. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have any other questions?
Yes, I do.
Okay, and what's your name?
My name is Marjorie, and I'm from Florida.
Oh, Marjorie, where are you calling? You're from Florida. Oh, where in Florida
yes.
are you?
I'm from not-so-sunny today, Florida. But
oh, no, I'm sorry
lot,
to hear that.
A heck of a lot better than your caller from New York, I assure you.
I'm sure, without probably a foot and a half of snow, hopefully.
Oh, no,
yeah,
no
so
snow here
question?
Ever.
No, that's
found your show tonight to be very informative and interesting, and I look forward to many more shows. Are you on every Thursday?
No, I'm probably going to be on, and I was going to mention this at the very end. I will be on, I predict, every 2 weeks. I'm a little noncommittal about it, but I'm probably going to be on Wednesdays at 10 p.m. every 2 weeks, and I'm in the process of setting up, you know, co-hosts. You know, I have someone I'm going to be talking with about managing money as a couple. I have somebody else who's going to be talking about, jobs and, you know, how that, you know, this job, you know, this economy and the situation with everybody losing their job or not being able to keep their job, etc. I'm going to be meeting with different co-hosts, and it's most likely going to be every 2 weeks because I found people are very shy, and I'm going to have to strong-arm some people to get them on the air or at least find the extroverts. But it will most likely be Wednesdays at 10 p.m. Would you prefer
a weekly
show?
Oh, okay. I'll make a note of that.
Okay.
I beg
your
pardon?
Does every 2 weeks sound good to you?
Oh, I look forward to it.
Oh, that's great. Now, do you have a question, Marge?
Yes, I do. I am a senior citizen, and I've recently been diagnosed as being pre-diabetic. And after I got over the initial shock, I have to learn how to like the new me better, so to speak. Any suggestions?
Well, you know, I think, first of all, the fact that you know that that is your challenge, you're already ahead of the game. Do you know what I'm saying? That you're aware that you need to kind of embrace the fact that you said you're pre-diabetic or you're diabetic?
Well, it depends on what day you ask me.
Okay. All right. So it goes from one to the other. But what I'm saying is I think it's a very good beginning for you to know that you are going to need to make friends with this new reality in your life. That is, the best you can do is take care of yourself, follow whatever diet you need to do, however much exercise is prescribed. And, I think the best that you can do is to look at how can you make friends with being diabetic or pre-diabetic so it doesn't feel like it either defines you or it controls your life. And what do you need to do so that you lower the noise in your head about it. And I'm wondering, do you feel like you've already begun to do that with some tools or some information or anything that helps demystify it for you?
Oh, I'm not necessarily aware of what I'm doing. However, after the initial shock, I do feel that as if I'm not so nervous about it anymore because I am proactive in my diet.
That's great.
I'm trying to make peace with the idea that I have a disease, quote unquote. I still haven't wrapped my head around that.
Okay.
I refer to it more as a condition rather than a disease when I really do know it is a disease.
Okay. You know, whatever word you call it, I think it's probably realistic for you to legitimize the fact that there's always a grieving period around any kind of chronic health issue. You know, there's a relinquishing of... you know, this illusion that we all have that we could just live however we want, you know, eat whatever we want, do whatever we want, and we'll live forever or we'll always be well, everything will work fine. So there's a certain amount of loss inherent in that. And so I think if you can kind of legitimize a certain amount of kind of grieving, maybe feeling sorry for yourself, feeling weirded out, but knowing that, as it sounds like you do, that... it's really embracing a life where this is part of your life, but it doesn't, you don't give it the power to define you. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like people living with cancer. I had cancer in 2003, and, you know, when you're a cancer survivor, you're left with the reality that, you know, it's in there somewhere, it could always come back, and you have a choice whether you live the rest of your life in fear and ruled by it and controlled by it, or you just find a way to accept. And in your case, it's an ongoing condition, disease, whatever word you want to use. But in other words, what are the things you need to do to live with it as happily as possible and to bring the people on board around you? That could be another whole show. You know, what you need for support from the people you love, your husband or your children, you know, so that you feel like you have the maximum amount of cheerleading around you and nobody's undermining you.
What about the Cookie Monster?
The one in your head or the one you might live with? We all have one of those. I'm no diabetic, expert here, and we only have 1 minute remaining, but I think, you know, part of your job is to figure out what kind of cookies you can have, if any, if you can have any with regular sugar in them, what amount, and what you do instead to treat yourself, you know, so if cookies have been a treat, what else you can do. It could be another whole show, Marge.
Well, thanks very much, Dr. Sue.
Okay, we have 90 seconds on my test show. I cut out early, but anyway, that could be the subject of another good show. How you manage yourself with some kind of chronic health issue, and how you bring the people on board around you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Sue.
Oh, okay, you're welcome. In any event, this was the first show. I didn't drop anything. I didn't spill water on myself. I didn't use a headset, so I didn't have to worry about that. I hope you will tune in. It will be about 2 weeks, and it will probably be on a Wednesday at 10 p.m., and I'll keep you posted as to what the subject will be, but I'm sure it's going to be something that's going to be interesting. So take care of yourself and the people around you. And to everybody, have a really, really happy New Year.